Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 30 years. I'm joined each and every Saturday by the great Steve Paulette. Oh my God, I'm back from my safari to East Africa, the most beautiful country, Tanzania. I went to three different places in Tanzania, the Serengeti Plains, to see the great migration of the wildebeest and zebra. 2.5 million wildebeest going, crossing the border through rivers from Tanzania to Kenya. I also went to the crater in Tanzania. A volcano exploded 2.5 million years ago, and the roof of the volcano collapsed into the center, creating the largest open crater in the world. And it's housing some of the most exotic animals and saving them from extinction, particularly the rhinoceros. I was there. And I also spent time in the Tarangire Reserve. Wait till I tell you all these stories. We were going to have a guest, but I just got too much to talk about. And then while I'm in Africa, Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson get injured. And everybody's texting me. Is there a connection with a calf strain and an Achilles tendon rupture? Is there a connection with the hamstring and the ACL? So today's show, we're going to spend some time at 7:15 and at 8:15 to get into the anatomy so that you can understand with some Clapper vision how this all works. How the hamstring actually helps the ACL when it's working right. How the Achilles tendon is relatable to a calf strain in terms of its anatomy. Fascinating. So that you yourselves can understand the root of all of this. The judgment of playing. Listen, this is what Klay Thompson does. This is why we love him and appreciate his talent and who he is. His desire to play. Same thing for Kevin Durant. So it's really interesting to hear Charles Barkley and hear Shannon Sharp, you know, talk about shoulda, coulda, woulda. But in the end, to me, what's most fascinating is the anatomy. And I'm just going to leave it at that. But I want you to understand that anatomy. So coming up at 7:15 and at 8:15, we'll get into it. Both those players. I've been on a plane for 24 hours. Can you imagine? It takes a long time to get to East Africa. But it sure is good to be back. And I could not wait to come back to talk about the animals and why at 62 years old, it was important and is important to see where man started in this world and the animals that have been there since. You got to put this on your bucket list. I want to get into it, but it made me think all week about the animals in life. The shape of these animals is so different. The color of the animals is so different. Some of them have spots, like the leopard and the giraffe. Some of them have stripes, like the zebras. No two zebra are the same. They're like snowflakes. They're like fingerprints. Why do they have these stripes? Oh, wait till I think I could do 4 hours today, Steve Paulette. I don't even know where to begin. But I do want to make a connection like we do each and every Saturday with the world of art, the world of sports, and the world of surgery, the concept of the animals. So where do we begin? We begin with Johnny Carson interviewing the great Doris Day to set the tone because she describes the fact that animals are actually better behaved than humans.
You know, the other day I saw on television something, news thing, you know, some frantic thing where the gunmen were going crazy and they're having a shootout, and the one man said he was behaving like an animal. Animals don't do that. They're terrific. They're calm, they're peaceful, they're loving. What I figure is that inhuman beings behave that way, not animals.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. See how they take care of their young. See how they work together as a family. I got to see a birth, a buffalo, a giant water buffalo, leave the herd, go under a tree, and give birth to a calf. This animal, with the placenta coming out of the mother, is now following the mom to go back to where the herd is, to disappear in the midst of the herd, and then you see the bulls, these gigantic animals surrounding the rim, protecting this mother and newborn calf. That's how animals behave. The love, the protection, the care. Doris Day is right. So when I thought about the art world and the concept of animal behavior, it was real easy because there was a group called the Animals, and the singer was Eric Burdon. But actually, the way these guys behaved to each other was not like animals. It was like inhumans behaving inhumanly. What do I mean by that? Because their number one song, The House of the Rising Sun, was an old blues song that had no authorship. It was in the public domain that Eric Burdon loved taking old blues songs and turning them around and making them their own. But when it came time to get royalties on this song, it was not shared equally in the group, and it was not to Eric Burdon, the lead singer. Wait till you hear the group, the Animals, talk about how someone in their group got all the royalties. Here's the song, though. They wrote this, well, they didn't write the song, they prepared the song, 1964, 1965, they released it 1966, and it became a number one hit for them, but it was in the public domain. Okay, that's fine, and when they put this together, they all expected to now share in the royalties of the song that became such a big hit. Until they found out that, no, the keyboard player is listed, Alan Price, as the arranger. And the royalties all went to him. A story about how people don't behave in a way you'd expect. The name of the group is The Animals, but listen to how this whole thing came about.
The band was like... It was designed, it was designed like a fragmentation grenade, you know, it was designed to go off.
But what made The Animals was the tensions within it.
Tensions.
And what made it also destroy it.
What makes it destroyed it. There's tension when you see that pride of animals, but not really.
With the blues, it's kind of like a computer is today. It's something that everybody can do. Everybody can make magic with. Get three chords in a backbeat. Play one or two chords in a guitar. Have the courage to stand up and sing and express yourself. And anybody can be a blues star.
He's way too humble. Not everybody can sing like Eric Burdon.
Eric just wanted to do blues. And I was brought up in a much more melodic atmosphere with church and with Victorian and Edwardian music hall songs. And it's quite restrictive to play three chords and that sort of thing. So I think there was a tug of war going on immediately.
When you see that herd of elephant and you see that pride of lions, yeah, there's some tension. There's some individualism that's going on. But what's most fascinating is when you look at that elephant or giraffe and for a moment they make eye contact with you, which I had with a leopard, you feel like he's looking at you and only you in the world. Well, it turns out Eric Burdon had the same gift. Listen to this.
Eric has this thing which you can't teach anybody. They've either got it or they haven't got it. When he walked on the stage, he would appear to be talking to every individual in the audience. He'd appear to be singing the songs to individuals in the audience. Baby, I had to dance. It's not an art because art can be developed. It's just a gift. Start clapping my
hands. Incredible.
Eric Burdon, refused to acknowledge any distance between himself and the material. He was like a little battering ram trying to knock down any obstacle that stood between him and the emotion of the moment. There was none of that artful, self-mocking distance which characterized Jagger.
There was a rawness, to the basics, going back to Mother Nature. Eric Burdon had that.
The fact that the animals were dependent on outside sources for most of their material, that they didn't have an onboard songwriter, meant that, in a sense, instead of being able to pass through their sources, they ended up exploring them in greater depth.
One can write until the cows come home, but there are some simple pieces of bluesology that are such poetry, such finely tuned, minimalistic, few words that mean so much, you know.
You want to go back to the beginning of life on this planet? You go to Africa. You want to go back to the beginning of songs? He preferred to go back to the old blues songs.
I love to be able to take a real Superman, you know, 1920 penned blues tune that nobody knows or has heard of, or very few people have heard of, and turn it into something that's, for the general ear.
He wanted to go back to the basics, the rawness.
Okay, can I ask you about House of the Rising Sun now and the whole disagreement with it, which is the thing that, I mean, obviously I've got to ask you about that.
No, you haven't.
And House of the Rising Sun was the band thing, it was the band crusade. Hey, we want to record this.
First of all, I taught the chords to Hilton Ballantyne.
But House of the Rising Sun came about by Hilton's suggestion, 100%. You know, it was his idea all along.
The band members are saying the guitar player came up with the idea of doing it. But Alan Price, the keyboard player, says, nope, I'm the one who arranged it. That's why I'm getting all the royalties.
Then I made them rehearse it and play it in 12-4, 6-8 time, whichever you want to call it.
Pricey wouldn't have anything to do with it. He walked out every time we started playing the song.
Pricey turned around to us and said, can you not play something else? Because that is so corny. You know, dang, 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 dang. So corny, he said.
And so we just did the whole thing, and we all just said, "Well, you can piss off the stage when we play it."
And I turned up and I says, you play your keyboards, I'll play my guitar.
That was the guitar player.
We did the move to London just after the new year.
We were sitting there and they were saying, well, what's the credits on this song, you know?
The thing about it is it was public domain, the song. You know, it didn't have a known author. So anybody who recorded that song could claim a writer's royalty from it, in fact, by saying arrangement by so-and-so.
You know, we all arranged it, except Pricey, who wasn't there at the time.
I didn't want to take credit, but people who are sharper than myself aggressively told me, by putting me up against a wall, that I had to put my name upon it.
When the record came out, there was only Alan Price's name on the record.
We understand the royalties would be shared, but as it happens, Alan's received all the royalties off House of the Rising Sun.
The royalties came in, posted to Alan, the day before we were going to do gigs in Sweden. We never saw him again for 9 months.
Wow. No, I hated flying, and as I told you, from day one, after we had some sort of success, I wanted to go back home. I didn't like it. It was a conveyor belt of aggression and filth.
Yeah.
That was the experiment that the animals was. That's the way I have to look at it. In order to stop myself from going nuts, because I have to sing this song every night with this guy in England who I haven't seen for 20 years is sitting back watching his TV, smoking his pipe with his missus, getting paid for me being out there singing. But I'm cool. I'm not bitter. I'm bitter sweet.
I'm not bitter. I'm bitter sweet. Here's a group called the Animals, kind of behaving like animals amongst each other. But actually, when you go and visit the animals and you see how they treat each other, they're a lot more nicer, kinder, protective to each other than actually we are to each other. And Doris Day is right. So before you go calling someone an animal. And coming up next, we're going to get into it, because where in sports do we see the name the animal? Marshawn Lynch, better known as Beast Mode, a running back. I want you to hear, he was called Beast Mode. And he was called a thug. But his answer to that question is right on, because he is respected in his career as a running back. But his response to, what do you think about people calling you a thug, was such a sophisticated answer that he actually brings out the best in the way an animal would behave. I'll explain more, as well as getting into Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson's injury. And I'll take your calls. The clinic will be open. The number's 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show, the Animal Edition, here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Oh, what a song. This is the Animals. Eric Burdon singing. We got to get out of this place. If it's true. This band was just amazing. The Animals, Eric Burdon. Why are we playing that song? Because I'm back from safari. Spent the last couple of weeks traveling throughout Tanzania in East Africa. And I want to give a shout out, because I know they're going to listen to the podcast. The crew who took care of me. Johan in the Terran gear. Peter and Pascal. And in the Serengeti Plains, Wazili. They took me to see things that they'll stay with me for the rest of my life. To see the animals so up close, I could touch them. They say you need to go see the big five. What's the big five? The lion, the leopard, an elephant, buffalo, and rhino. And finally, on the last day, I saw the black rhino. So I did see all five. But actually, the top five things that happened to me was seeing a leopard, I don't know, 20 feet away from me, sitting on top of a termite hill, overlooking this expanse of raw land, looking for an impala, an antelope, a gazelle. The beady eyes, the colors, the shape, the spots. That was number one. Number two, we're driving in the Jeep. Again, no one around. Deepest, darkest Africa. And a bull elephant is on the road. Well, it's his road. I'm going, uh-oh, what's going to happen now? We pull the Jeep off the side of the road, shut the engine off, and literally my heart started to race, because this thing is so big. He could take this Jeep I'm in and just throw it in the air if he wanted to. He comes galloping now down the road towards us. I'm saying to myself, oh my God, what is going to happen now? He gets, and I videotaped it. He's getting closer and closer. He gets to the front of the truck and he looks. You talk about Eric Burdon looking into the crowd. He had a gift that he can make eye contact and make everyone at the concert feel like he was talking, looking right at them. This elephant is looking right at me. I said, hey, I went to yeshiva. Don't touch me. I learned Gemara. Leave me alone. And this elephant comes right to the front. Then he passes the window. I swear he was inches away from me. Looks inside, looks at me, my wife, my two guides. Throws some sand up with his trunk on top of him, grunts. And it became very clear, we're in his house. We're just guests. We came to do no harm. He snorted and then walked right on by. That was number two for me. Then I'm in the Serengeti Plains. And during the day, the lions are not, they're hunting mostly at night. They're eating at night. So during the day, it's hot. They're not doing too much. So we come upon a water hole, a pond in the middle of the Serengeti Plains. There's nothing around for thousands of miles. The lion decides it's hot. I'm near the water hole, but it's okay, I'm too hot. He gets up. We're in the Jeep. He walks right past the Jeep, this giant lion, and goes right to this tree. And I watch the lion climb up the tree and find a place in one of the branches up there. It was a life-changing experience to see this. The color, the shape, the design. You talk about how your computer should look with the right design, the right color, the right shape. Forget about Steve Jobs. Makes you start thinking about who designed all of this. If you ask me in one word, what's it like to visit Africa? The one word for me is spiritual. You can watch all the YouTube you want. You can look at all the books and photos you want. But until you're breathing the same air as these animals are, with nothing has changed since man has been on this planet, it's life-changing. Okay, that was the third thing. The fourth thing, we're in the Tarangire again, this reserve with the Maasai. Oh, God, it was just amazing. Wait till I talk to you about the Maasai. I was fascinated mostly by their shoes. You know what they do? They buy brand new. Some guy in the Maasai tribe figured this out. They buy a brand new motorcycle tire. They rip it up, use every aspect of it to make the straps on top, and the sole of the shoe is the motorcycle tire. Oh, God, it was amazing. But I went for a walk in the reserve with a Maasai warrior. And the coolest thing was speaking to him or listening to him speak in Swahili. Jambo is how you say hello. It's kind of like ciao in Italian. Asante sane is how you say thank you very much. There's a few words that I learned. Thankfully, he knew English enough to show me. You know, Leonardo da Vinci, at the end of his life, was most fascinated by what was invisible in life. The energy that's invisible, that makes the waves in the ocean, that makes wind on trees. Well, when you look at the footprint that's in Africa, you can tell the direction the animal was going. You can tell what kind of animal it was, how long ago it was. You can see so much in the footprint. So I was with a Maasai warrior tracker, just looking at footprints. Oh my God, it was as though the animal was staying there. You know what it reminds me of? Shadows, okay? I love shadows because shadows mean something is there that the sun is hitting, creating the shadow, but it's the shadow is the shadow. It's not the actual mass that's creating it. It represents that mass. A footprint is the same way. Your imagination now starts taking off when you look at a shadow or a footprint of what that animal was, who was literally standing where you're standing right now. I'll get into the other top four. Yeah. All right, let's see. We got. I love it. People are calling in to talk about Tanzania. This is fantastic. Although we will talk about some clap revision with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson. The number is 877-710-ESPN. But let's go to Benjamin and Whittier. You're on with Dr. Clapper. You have a Tanzania story?
Yes, I do. I was out there on a medical mission in 2012, and I also went in last February.
How young are you, Benjamin?
I am 49.
And what do you do for a living?
I am a surgical technician.
Really? Where?
Here in Pasadena, the Huntington Hospital.
Good for you. I love that. You ever do any orthopedics?
I do orthopedics all the time.
Oh, and you listen to the show?
Absolutely. I get a lot of good tips from you as well.
So you know what clap revision is, Benjamin.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk to me. Tell me about Tanzania.
Oh, my goodness. Where can I start? It was just an amazing trip. The first animal that we saw, we were on the, I guess, the road, the highway, going towards Ngorongoro Crater.
Yep.
And the giraffe just walks right in front of us. It was something out of Jurassic Park.
Yes.
It was amazing.
Yes.
Amazing. We pulled over, took a bunch of photos. I must have taken at least 3,000 photos.
And yet, Benjamin, and you'll show those photos. It'll remind you, which is great. You'll show those photos to your friends and your family, and you can show a video, and you can look at the pictures, the still pictures. But there's nothing like seeing it and being there and breathing the air that they're breathing.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's there's a whole nother level, and it's a pain in the neck. It's 24 hours to fly there.
It sure is.
Oh, my God. I flew to Amsterdam, so it's like 12 hours to fly from L.A. to Amsterdam. Then you got to do the layover, and it's another 8 hours to fly from Amsterdam to Mount Kilimanjaro. But, man.
That's exactly the same trip. We didn't see Kilimanjaro. It was kind of fogged in. But the last day I was there, you could barely see Kilimanjaro. I was like, wow, Kilimanjaro, amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
I think, though, the animal, the shape, the size, the coloration, like the giraffe you're talking about, people don't really appreciate the pattern on their skin, the different shapes that are up and down their skin. And then you say to yourself, none of this happens by accident. The reason this animal has these spots or rectangular shapes or odd shapes on them has to serve some kind of purpose. So yes, it's camouflage, which is probably the main thing for the giraffe. But when you saw zebras, right?
I saw zebras. I saw
hyenas. So here's the thing about the zebra. Here's what I've learned about why the zebra, with being black and white, there's no blending into a Serengeti plain when you're stand out glaringly like a strobe light in black and white. But now I figured out and learned the reason. And you know what? Can you hang on, Benjamin?
Absolutely.
We're going to pay some bills. We're going to come back, and I'm going to tell you why the zebra is black and white with those stripes. I'll explain.
Excellent.
Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. You're listening to The Animals with Eric Burden. Just came back from a two-week travel on safari in East Africa in Tanzania. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Benjamin, let me tell you why. Benjamin and Whittier, why the zebra has those stripes. And no two zebras has the same exact stripes. That poor little newborn zebra, how does it determine this is my mother versus the other zebras? Because actually, the patterns are completely different if you look carefully enough. I'm going to tweet out a picture of two zebras. I was literally, I could touch them. I was so close to them. And you'll see, oh my God, if you look really carefully, they're actually different. But you could talk camouflage. You can talk shapes and sizes of evolution and why the survival of the fittest came about and the animals look the way they do and are built the way they are. But I could not possibly figure this out. So one of my guides was a Maasai warrior, and I said to him, okay, riddle me this, Batman. Why does a black and white horse get to be this way? What's the protection here? Number one, the wildebeest, which has this, which they hang out together, the zebra and the wildebeest, has no vision. They have a tremendous sense of smell, but and they can apparently tell when it's going to rain beforehand. They have all these cool things, but they can't see. The zebra has tremendous eyesight, but not a great sense of smell. So what one lacks, the other has. So they hang out together. But what protects the zebra from the lion, who loves to go after fast-running things, is that when this zebra starts to run, those stripes start to be like the kaleidoscope. You know, whenever they talk about someone who's on LSD or something, that the television makes these black and white stripes and they go crazy. Well, when the zebra runs, those black and white stripes starts to become like an illusion and confuses the lion when it's running. And that is actually why they wound up staying this color as a survival mechanism, which now it makes total sense. I had to be taught this by a Maasai warrior, which is the perfect person to get this kind of advice from. But, you know, it's something that you would agree, Benjamin. You make a list of things you've got to see in your life. Michelangelo's David is one of them. The other one, though, is the greatest artist, is if you believe in God or not, is whoever created these animals. And the best place to see it, the zoo is one thing. The zoo is, let's go to the cage where, you know, the tiger is and you see the tiger. But when you go to Tanzania and you go on a safari, you get up in the morning and you have no idea what you're going to see today is special.
Absolutely. It's an incredible sight to see. Caged up, totally different from out in the wild.
Right. Well, it's just a pleasure to know that you're listening to the show, Benjamin. You're the reason that I do the show, is to connect with people for 2 hours every Saturday. The world of art, the world of sports, and the world of surgery. God bless you, and thanks so much for all you
do,
Benjamin.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Benjamin.
Asante. All right, which means thank you very much in Swahili. I have to tell you about a soup I had, a Swahili soup, which I cannot wait. Now that I'm home, I'm going to drive my wife crazy to make this soup. It's a Swahili rice soup, which about as easy as it gets. And I'm going to tell you the recipe of this unbelievably delicious thing to eat. I'm going to do my own spin on it. But let's take a call now. We'll take a break, Steve. Take one more call. Okay. Let's go to Carrig in Pasadena. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, man, just great. Dr. Clapper and the Weekend Warrior staff. you know, it's funny that you mentioned this subject today, because I had a plethora of different subjects. But this one, I was watching Grizzly Adams and the kinetic energy that he had with the animals and whatnot. And I wanted to ask you, you know, also having an animal for myself, and I love animals, you know, it makes evidently people live longer. But I need another.
You're right. Not only that, let me tell you something. Cedars-Sinai, my hospital, and I can speak probably for other hospitals in Los Angeles, but I know Cedars because I've been there 30 years. They have a whole program where a dog becomes, it's the right shots and the right behavior, and they are volunteers, and they come and visit patients, my patients in the hospital who've had surgery, and jump up in the bed, and you know what they've shown? That your blood pressure goes down, your heart rate goes down. There are all kind of medical benefits of having a dog sit on the bed with you while you're recovering from whatever it is that life has given you or whatever surgery you've had done. And it is special. And you're totally right, Carrick.
I've had that type of situation after me, because I'm just only a week removed from the hospital, and also Pasadena Meadows, where they have orthopedics and kinesiology, and they work with you to recover. But you know what? I was in Huntington Hospital, and you're exactly right. They did have a group that would bring dogs up and soothe you, or whatever medical benefit that it may provide.
Yes. So tell me what's up with you. I don't have a lot of time. I want to be able to take care of you. What hurts?
You know what? My knee. I fell on my knee. Mm-hmm. This is my recovery process, and I'm looking at my dog right now. And my knee, I fell on it, and I had a microfracture on the left fibula, below, but it's healed up now. But I'm still having a little pain. It seems like I'm almost like in the same situation with Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, where now I'm, you know, a weight-bearing patient. Well, I have to be very careful. And I'm having a little trouble inside on my lateral and medial.
All right, let me give you some advice. You're 59 years old. They did a microfracture because you have arthritis. I'm not so sure, just to be honest with you, that that's something that I would have necessarily told you to have done. but I can't second guess anybody. It's not my place to do that. But that osteoarthritis that you have, and do you understand what a microfracture is?
No, please explain it to me.
So I'm going to give you a Clapper vision. You ready for it?
Yes, I am.
In Pasadena, one of the most beautiful places in Los Angeles, you will see gigantic homes with beautiful green lawns in front of them. What if the sprinkler in one spot on that beautiful green lawn was broken? You know what would happen, Carrick, to that spot of the beautiful green lawn? It would turn brown because it wasn't getting irrigated anymore in that one spot. That is a lesion of the green lawn. Well, guess what? The smooth, beautiful white cartilage on the end of your bone, on your femur or your tibia in your knee, looks like that green lawn with a brown spot in it. That's what the damage of arthritis will look like. And the idea of a microfracture surgery is just like the landscaper, the gardener, punches holes into the brown spot to, they use the term, to aerate the lawn, to allow the seedlings to come up from below to now turn green again, that brown spot. The microfracture is we literally drill holes into the divot, into the brown spot in the green lawn, into that exposed bone in the cartilage on the, in that one spot, that pothole in the road of the cartilage on the end of the bone. We drill holes in it with the idea that the cells, just like the seedlings, can come through the bone marrow now to the surface and become green again. In the case of your cartilage, become white again. You do it when there's a spot on the cartilage on the end of the bone where you just have a single spot. You would not aerate the whole lawn, right? You would just do that one spot. But here's the problem. At 59 years old, you're old. You're an alta cocker, as we would say in Cedars-Sinai. Will the microfracture be successful in a 59-year-old? Very rare. It can happen. I'm not saying no. But most likely, you're headed for a resurfacing of your knee. Metal against plastic. The old days of a knee replacement have been improved. We really can do better things now than we did before. But that's what you're headed for. Don't let them convince you a cortisone shot or other kind of needle's going to do anything to this knee. Stay away from doing that. There's a book I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Knees, about water exercises. This is what I need you to be doing right now in your recovery from that surgery to maximize the condition of the muscles above and below your knee so less stress gets put on the joint. That's your best bet. Water program, do this for a month, and then a month after you do the water, get busy with your stationary bike. That would be my advice for you, Carrigan. Thanks so much for listening. All right, Warriors, we're going to take a break. We'll pay some bills. We'll have a last segment. I want to talk about so many things. But specifically, I really want to get into Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson. But I got too many calls right now, so I'll probably do that at 8:15. Jennifer, hang on the line. I'm going to take your call coming up next. Gene Crawford says every female listener is a P1 listener for the show. They're not listening during the week. I can't wait to ask Jennifer if that's the case. I'm so excited to be back to talk to you about my trip to Africa and be a part of the Weekend Warrior Nation. You're listening to the one and only ESPN LA 710. Mm-hmm. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Paul Simon, she got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. The Maasai Warriors are using motorcycle tires. This is his love of African music. One night, this Swahili tribe near one of the hotels I was at, called Treetops. Can you imagine? The hotel room, the little bungalows, you had to climb up into a tree house. And they had to close the patio door that you went up the ladder so that animals couldn't climb up to get you. What an experience. What a beautiful experience. Put that on your bucket list. Africa. All right, let's go to Jennifer in West Hills. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help? Jennifer.
Hi, Dr. Clapper.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in. So what do you do for a living?
I run a small service company for banks.
Oh, nice.
We do various services for banks.
And did you start this company yourself?
No, I did not. I fell into it in my early 20s when I was actually wanting to be a sports broadcaster. I was in school for that and obviously never followed through with that. But
all right. Well, look at what happened to me. I had no idea in a million years I'd be doing this with my life one day, which is what's so fun about life, the unexpected things that happen. It's really a hell of a ride.
Absolutely, and you're a joy to listen to.
Well, thank you so much for being wonderful. Thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate it. So how can I help you? What happened to you?
My left knee, I started bowling in my bowling league after about a year and a half off. And I've been bowling since I was about 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I actually bowled competitively or professionally for about 10 years. So,
have you ever had a 300 game?
Yes, I have. I've had about 27 of them.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Wow.
Thank you.
I love it.
Oh, I know. I'm sure you haven't talked to many bowlers on this level in your life.
No. There was a bowling alley where I grew up called Falcaro's, which I'm sure more organized crime figures did more deals there than the bowling that they did. But that was the bowling alley near me. And I grew up going to Falcaro's. And, wow, that's a woman bowler, no less. This is fantastic. You made my day, Jennifer. All right. Tell me what happened to you. How can I help?
Well, I started bowling again. I took about a year and a half off, and I started bowling again. And my push-off leg is my left leg mm-hmm. before I slide. Mm-hmm. And I bowled my first night, and by the time I got home, my knee was really, really tight mm-hmm. and a little bit swollen. Mm-hmm. And as time has gone on, you know, I've been icing it and elevating it. And, you know, it seems like it's going to get better. And then it feels every once in a while like it wants to give out on me. And, like, the right side of it, it mm-hmm. kind of, like, where it bends, it kind of gets painful. But it does. That's not consistent. Mm-hmm. And
now, what do you do to stay in shape for your bowling? Do you ride a bike? You use treadmill, elliptical? What do you do to stay in shape?
Recently, nothing, because I haven't been bowling. Normally, I'm a walker, mm-hmm. And I have a pool, and, you know, it hasn't been the season for the pool. So I can honestly say recently I haven't done anything. I just kind of jumped back into it, you know, like I've been, like the last time I bowled was last week, you know.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. At 48 years old, the symptoms you're describing are speaking for themselves. What does that mean? It's swollen. It's not supposed to be swollen. So a knee that presents with limited motion, some pain, some swelling, is not like you calling me saying my knee is clicking. What does that mean? Noise alone is never anything to worry about. People falsely think that cracking your knuckles ruins the joints. It doesn't. But when you have pain and swelling and limited motion, there's something the matter inside the joint. And when fluid builds up, that alone will actually make you feel like it's giving out on you. You don't need a ligament tear to do that, and I doubt you did tear your ligament. Yes, they happen without any contact. Look at Klay Thompson's knee, for example. No one touched him, and he tore his ACL. But from what you're describing, that's not what we're dealing with, even though you feel like it's unstable. The swelling alone will make that sensation occur by itself. You're dealing with either a torn meniscus or the beginnings of arthritis, which is the other kind of cartilage in your knee that's starting to break down. That doesn't mean you run to have surgery for it at 48 years old. Even if when you get your MRI, it says you have a torn meniscus, I'm going to be the lone voice in your life orthopedically to tell you actually not to have surgery if you can avoid it. If, God forbid, your knee is stuck where it's in a locked position, that's a different story. But I would argue, even a not-so-great meniscus, one that's torn in a 48-year-old, you have to do everything you can not to have surgery on it. And that would mean taking up Monday, Wednesday, Friday pool exercises, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday the bike, and not be as much of a walker right now. And you can keep bowling. Bowling is the vice that I would let you have as a 48-year-old, but I don't want you to do other things that would be hurting it. But it all starts, Jennifer. By the way, Jennifer has an R at the end of it, but if you're from New York, there's no R. It's called Jennifer. Okay, just one. It's J-E-N-N-I-F-A-H. Jennifer. Okay? So, Jennifer.
Okay.
You need, but you always want to start. Just like in your business, information empowers you. You and I need to empower each other. Go get an MRI. Don't let the HMO crazy people tell you, no, you can't have one. You tell them you got a second opinion from Dr. Clapper. Get an MRI, and I'd be happy to go over it with you on the radio next week, the week after, whatever, and I'll explain it to you. But don't let them give you a shot of cortisone or any needles in your knee of any kind. The pool and the bike are great, but first you need a diagnosis, okay?
Okay, I appreciate it. And just so you know, I asked for some recommendations, some local recommendations on my local Facebook page, and like 10 people recommended you. And I was like, well, I listened to them.
Yeah.
It's a little far. Oh. So you come highly recommended by people in the West Valley.
Thank you so much. Listen, you're an angel from above, and thank you for tuning in and checking in with us. I very much appreciate it. I'm happy to help you get the MRI, and I'll explain it to you.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Clapper.
Okay. God bless you, Jennifer. Thank you. All right, Warriors. Take a break. Coming up next, we're going to talk about animals. It's art in sports. And in my world of surgery, a very beautiful guy named Dr. Charles Chip Cornell in New York, he saved me. Like many of those animals I saw in Africa, where the big bull protected the young calf, the wildebeest that I saw. Yeah, there's animals in surgery in a good way, just like I saw in Africa. We'll get into it coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710.